Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
Captain Burnham, I demand that the prisoners be held in the brig. We will not share space with them.
Under what authority are you making these demands?
I am the sovereign magistrate
of a colony that no longer exists. Those people are now under Federation protection, and they're subject to Federation law,
but
as are you. As long as you are on this vessel, I need to remind you that wherever you find a new home, you'll be arriving as a refugee, seeking shelter and grace. I hope you find a more just society than the one you had a hand in creating. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a ship to command.
I'm watching Star Trek. You watch Star Trek. Everybody watch Star Trek today. We watch season 4, episode 5, called The Examples. This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
What episode of podcast are we on?
107.
No.
That was last week.
That was last week.
Oh, shit.
Fucking Jesse, I've had enough of you.
I ruined your whole bit.
I've had enough of you.
108. I'm going to go now. Episode 108. The It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Season 4, episode 5.
And I'll tell you what. I'll tell you this much. I think, if you ask me, there's a fucking spore drive in the middle of that DMA doohickey.
Oh, yeah, maybe so.
I think there's a spore drive in the middle of it.
Who would have made it?
I don't know.
Some assholes.
It could be the Discovery itself, in like a future version or something. It could be, who the fuck knows? It could be some other thing. The fellow from The Expanse, the asshole from The Expanse who's playing the asshole here.
He's from Ryza.
Oh, he's on The Expanse?
Yes. He's interested both in the DMA and in the spore drive. Right? Because he's working on the spore drive. That was one of Stamets's main complaints, is that he wasn't getting...
He's getting on Stamets's nerves.
He wasn't...
But so you're saying the Discovery traveled through time and did
some
shit?
No, I'm not saying that.
Why would the Discovery...
That's a possibility.
Why would the Discovery destroy planets with their shit? Unless it was an accident.
Because they can.
But, okay. All right. So...
You're saying the Discovery killed Book's planet?
I did not say any of that. All I said was that I am predicting... that there is a spore drive in the middle of that anomaly, because if you look at the beginning, when you see the opening, which I think is really cool, because they have that sort of Vulcan style ship, I guess is the USS Janeway.
Yeah.
And right. Then they have a
named
couple
after
other...
Captain Janeway, who's now dead in that time.
Well, you don't know that for certain.
Oh,
you're
right.
Assuming that.
Maybe they have her head sticking around.
I can
like
use
Futurama.
I can use the
holograms all over the place.
I can use the overwhelming evidence to make that assertion, but I have to remember in the back of my mind, I could be wrong. That's the secret. You always have to remember that you could
always
be wrong. Even if it's a small percentage, you don't let it dominate your life, but you just have, but it's a principle. If you think it's impossible that it could be, then why close yourself off to that possibility?
Because exactly. It could be named after Janeway's great-granddaughter. Who did even cooler things, maybe.
But given the evidence at hand,
yeah,
we might as well go with she's dead.
Especially if we incorporate the meta evidence. Mostly it's a TV show.
Yeah.
And they're making references to previous characters
from
the history of the TV show.
Yeah.
But if you watch that DMA at the beginning, when that DMA goes whoop, 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 and blips out of existence briefly, freaking everybody out, and then reappearing elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
What else does that? The spore drive.
That's well, it disappeared.
If you look at the graphics,
it did.
If you look at the VGA graphics, it does.
It's like
it
super
does
VGA.
It does like a swirl.
Super VGA.
Hey, it's better than CGA or EGA.
You're right.
Am I right?
It reappeared 1,000 light years away, though.
Yes.
4.2 seconds later.
And the spore drive can do that. And
does it take it 4 seconds to travel?
Well, it's got to do the whole floopy-doop down and floopy-doop up. Yeah. I'm guessing next episode, Stamets is going to be like, you know what? It took exactly the same amount of time as the Discovery spore drive takes. And then he'll be all like,
Yeah. He'll make his hmm face.
But anyway,
that's interesting. That never occurred to me that it could be the spore drive.
The main reason I'm thinking that was that on the second watch through, paying special attention to the VGA graphics of that.
Or
the action,
Super VGA.
Or this SVGA graphics.
It's at least Super Nintendo.
The visual cues they use are a swirling, swirly blip and then like a zloop blip.
But it didn't flip around like the Discovery does.
Yes, but we didn't see the thing inside the anomaly.
It's too far.
So we don't know. But you see glowing white star-like things spin around.
I thought it shrunk, though.
It also, you could say it shrank, or you could say that the thing at the center of it traveled.
And it followed.
And it disappears in the process.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Or it's a wormhole. Because, of course, obviously, it's this wormhole stuff
but,
is still,
but we
still
don't,
in play.
But we don't know who created it.
Even if there are no tachyons.
Space-time tunnel.
Time tunnel. We're going down time tunnel.
Space-time
but,
tunnel.
Well, there is I guess there's some clue at the end that, like, the Tarkin all grabs it at the back of his neck, and there's some kind of what looks to be an old plug on the back of his head.
I think that's supposed to be an indicator that maybe he was held prisoner by the Emerald Chain at one point.
Oh, is
didn't
that
they,
what
didn't
that
they
is?
Have some, you know, prisoner
type? Is it a tattoo,
type?
Or was it a
No, it was a scar type thing. Yeah.
And, so, why, but what was, they were talking about the spore drive, and he grabbed the back of his neck, which would sort of imply that it's related somehow.
Okay, well, I think.
And he specifically said, well, I don't think it's the Metrons or the Iconians or the whatever.
Or Q.
Which hasn't been around for 600 years.
Well, maybe if he's working on a spore drive, maybe he's already been jacked into his own spore drive.
Oh, wait, you think it's a jack-in device?
Could be. Could be one of them jack-em-ins.
He's jacking in?
What happens when he's jacking done in? Jacking in? What does he do then?
He's got to jack out.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, fair play. Fair play. I thought you were going to say jack off, but it's
no,
fair
I'm
play.
I'm not going to say
fair play. I didn't say jack on. You did say jack in. Your response, grammatically, A-okay.
All right.
Even though it undermines the joke a little bit.
Well, you should have set the joke up
That's
better.
That's too bad.
Okay, I think important to pull back. Pull back the, not the
pull,
curtain.
Not pull out.
Pull back the curtain. Not the no.
Now, do you don't want to jack in and then pull out?
I don't want to pull back the curtain. I merely want to move backwards a little bit. If we're on a dolly, just have it, you know, have the key grip.
If I had a dollar for every time I heard you say dolly,
dolly,
I have a dolly dollar.
Hello, dolly.
I'm sorry. Go on.
Before we discuss the rest of the episode, I think it's important to lay the important groundwork here, which is that this character. Was it Tarkin is his name?
Yeah.
Tarka.
Yeah, Tarkin. Yeah. Tarkin is Star Wars.
Tarkin's
Star
that guy
Wars,
on the
buddy.
Death Star.
That's Star Wars. So Tarka. Star Wars. Tarka from Ryza. Little genius boy from Ryza.
Little genius boy from Ryza.
Blowing up Caracal, was it? Isn't that one?
Oh, yeah.
What
Caracal.
Is a Caracal?
It's like a cat kind of thing.
Cat things.
Why did he blow up a cat?
He atomized it.
Oh, yeah. Caracal. Yeah, I know what those are. They have those on Ryza?
Tufty ears things.
They were Ryzen
Caracal. I didn't put it together because I was assuming it was some alien thing, but it's just some earth thing on Ryza.
Well, so the deal with this guy.
Why do they have earth creatures on Ryza?
You know how like they have the different plants on different continents.
You can get like KFC in Tokyo.
You get KFC.
But they didn't call it a Ryzerian Caracal.
No, it was just a Caracal.
I know what a Caracal is. I just didn't understand because I assumed it was something alien.
We're so used to the Star Trek.
I thought it was an alien beast.
Right. Well, he blew it up. That's fucked up.
Well, he atomized it.
Well, yeah, but it was messy. Yeah.
I bet it was.
Six of one, half a dozen of another, as they say.
It's got a lot of guts in there.
So the thing about this guy is... He's manipulating the fuck out of everybody.
Yeah.
Like, super manipulating.
Mm-hmm.
With Stamets, he recognizes that Stamets has a chip on his shoulder, right? And maybe he did this on purpose, treated him like this on purpose to set this up. Over the course of this episode, he gets Stamets to do what Tarka wants. Tarka gets Stamets to do what he wants, basically by feeding into his ego.
Exactly.
Slowly.
Yeah.
And not all at once. Not blowing wind up his ass or whatever the... colloquialism is that I'm forgetting at the moment. Blowing smoke. Wind. He does it a little bit at a time until at the end he's like, why don't you do the honors?
Yeah.
When he wants him to be the one to turn up the power all the way.
Right. Well, yeah, it began with when he got on the ship and he was like basically saying like a lot of great research. And then he's like a lot to improve on, just to like fuck with him a little bit to make
negging him basically.
Yeah, basically make Stamets want him more. It's like rejecting Stamets, but making Stamets be like want to prove himself. And then it came to the point when he's like smart people like you and me. That old trick when you like go up to someone and say like we're the smart people.
We're together.
Yeah, we're together. We're the smart people. They're all
help
dumb.
Help each other out.
Yeah, and so right, and so totally appealing to his
Let's
ego.
Let's break the
on that.
Laws of physics together.
But Stamets by the end sort of realizes after it's all done, he's like, wait a minute, that guy's kind of fucked up. Like he got caught up in the moment, but then after it was over, when he had time to calm down and think about it, he was like, this guy is kind of fucked up.
So I think the other question is whether to what degree and how long lasting being under his sway is going to be for all these characters. Because Stamets, I agree, at the end, he wasn't overtly saying, fuck that guy was totally tricking me. But he was...
He said he scares me, which is kind of like a big warning.
But he also said he scares me in the context of he reminds me of me. And so he's formed a connection.
I mean,
he's associating himself with Tarka, which I think Tarka was trying to do.
Okay. He said he scares me. He's so single-minded on his work. He cares about nothing else. And I don't think Stamets realized that he was actually kind of talking about himself, too, at that point. I think he was just seeing, like, this guy, all he cares about is himself, his work, and he scares me, blah, blah, blah. And then Colbert looks, he's like, huh, really? Mm-hmm. And then that's when Stamets realized, okay, I guess I'm like that, too. Yeah. So you could say that Stamets didn't realize that he was like that, and maybe when Stamets sees Tarka acting like this, Stamets will learn from it, be like, oh, I was being like that. Yeah. I can't be like that. So...
Well, and then the other person he manipulates, there's a couple others, but
Saru,
it's a brief thing, but he gets this crazy reaction out of Saru, which is comically hilarious, like, oh!
Yeah. It's like an angry seal or something.
And that was pretty frightening.
And, you know, he did that after mocking Saru's feet and
he was trying to rattle him because Saru is like, he's the sensible and wise person in a lot of ways, but he's sort of taking the role of in the middle kind of person. And he's trying to, frame his sensibilities as like a weakness.
Galileo.
Yeah, Galileo, right. So he's just basically trying to rattle Saru to get him to his side, to get him to let go a little bit and to sort of put him off guard. He's a very emotional character in that sense. So the stuff he was doing about making the model and all that stuff and about like when he was like, who's doing this? It's like, I have no idea. And like, that was actually very like, you know, a scientific attitude of like, I don't know everything. I don't know why this is happening. Let's figure it out. And so that was cool. But at the same time, the methods he went to was sort of emotional and selfish and stuff. And so he was trying to get Stamets to be on his side using emotion. He was trying to sort of rattle Saru through emotion. Mm-hmm. And then because Jet Reno wasn't sort of like playing that game.
He couldn't control her.
He couldn't control her. So he just, he projected the emotion of grumpiness on her. He's like, oh, she's not going with me. So she must have a grumpy emotion. No, she was just trying to be like completely, you know, neutral on the issue. And he took that to mean like, I can't appeal to her emotion. Therefore I'll assign an emotion to her.
To be fair to him, Jet Reno is grumpy. On the other hand, I 100% agree that, his reaction was because he wasn't able to manipulate her. Either he wasn't able to figure it out or he was smart enough to know he couldn't to begin with, so he didn't engage with her too much.
I don't know.
Sort of ignored her.
I mean, she's just really dry. I don't know. I mean, I can see grumpiness maybe, but I don't see her walking around going, harumph. She's just really like...
I agree.
I forget what that word is.
Good point.
Maybe is cynical? It's almost cynical, not
synesthesia.
Quite.
Synesthesia? Synesthesia?
Synesthate.
When you taste purple?
Yeah, that's what it is. Mm. When you taste purple and you see...
But...
You can smell yellow.
Yeah, who I think we need to worry about most in terms of being manipulated by this fellow is Book.
Yes.
Book at the end was, I think, the most easy to get under his sway because Book is already upset because he's sort of traded places in some ways with Burnham this season where he's developed this hero complex. Wanting to save people from this DMA because he thinks that's like the only thing that can justify him being alive, I suppose. It mirrors Culber, Culber's conversation, which we'll touch on in a bit in a second. But and we've seen them developing somewhat of a simpatico relationship, and it makes sense now because we see they're both dealing with a similar issue of like just having to do everything in their power to save people. Different perspectives, but the same basic idea. And Tarka comes in and is straight up like going feeding right into what mm-hmm. what Book needs at that moment to right. be convinced. It's so clear, and it makes me nervous to know what the next thing is going to be, because Book is not a guy who is afraid of ignoring Starfleet, whatever, you know, just not, that hasn't been his life. So he's perfectly comfortable going off and doing whatever. Right.
Yeah. It seems like, he's trying to get, Book is kind of getting in the precipice of getting lost in his own grief, basically. Mm. And yeah, it seems like Tarka is going to take him to the edge of his own morality. And then it seems like Book will probably reject it eventually at some point. But the question is, will Tarka realize it? It seems like Tarka will get lost in his whole emotional game, but maybe Tarka will come to a realization at some point too. Who knows?
And the important thing here is the context of who he is applying his manipulations to. It's not just who it works on and who it doesn't. It's specifically Saru, of course. It makes sense because he needs his permission in order mm-hmm. to move the work forward, right? Okay, that's obvious. But where he puts the big guns towards are Stamets and Book, the two people who can fly a spore drive, navigate, strictly speaking. They can navigate a spore drive, right? He's been doing research on a spore drive. He hasn't been able to solve the quote-unquote navigator problem. He's using psychological manipulation tactics on the two remaining people in the universe that can use a spore drive.
That's a good point.
And I think the DMA has a spore drive.
Whenever I hear DMA,
somebody's got to get jacked in.
Whenever I hear DMA, I think of PMA, which is
what is that?
Positive mental attitude.
From Bad Brains.
Yeah, that Bad Brains.
Oh, I thought that was sort of like a psychological technique or something.
Well, I guess you could say
it might be.
It might be positive. You got that PMA.
Don't be depressed. Just have a positive mental attitude. That'll solve all your problems. If you're just more positive. You should just smile more. Goddammit.
You know. By the way, what? God, I hate that. Smile.
Just smile.
You look so much better with a smile.
Yeah, why don't you
Fuck
smile?
You.
Nobody
that be
does.
Great?
It's a lie.
You'll be happier if you smile.
It's like when I was busy, or when I used to wait tables, I'd get super fucking weeded, and then the manager would walk by.
Weeded?
And weeded, like, as in, like...
In the weeds?
In the weeds, yeah.
That's cool.
And so cool. That's cool.
It's cool a cool too. Verb.
Yeah, it's
waiter
adverb.
Talk.
Past waiter
tense.
Talk.
Past tense adverb.
Server.
Yeah, I guess I should say server. But when the manager would look at me when I'm super fucking busy and have about 20 things in my queue, he's like, smile. And I'm like, I just want to fucking punch him so much. It's like, fuck you,
I'll
asshole.
Smile after I stick my foot up your
and,
ass.
And I developed it. This is a real side note. Sorry.
Side note.
I developed this technique for not looking like a crazy person, because when I get really busy, my eyes open really wide and I start to look like an insane person.
Note to the audience, yes. This is a technique Dan has obviously abandoned.
Yeah. Because I'll tell you why. Because I would try to, like, I was like, okay, well, what's the opposite of opening your eyes wide? It's squinting. And so I would just look like this weirdo stoned person or something. Stoned at best.
Like, do you need new glasses?
Yeah. At best I would look stoned. At worst I would look like there's something wrong with me. So it's like, how do I prevent my... I couldn't prevent my eyes from opening really wide, and so I tried to squint, and that wouldn't work, so I was just like, I can't make my face any different than it is. I've tried so hard. At what point do you give up? Like, at what point do you embrace your faults, and at what point do you change them? You know what I'm saying? Like sometimes...
It's a constant negotiation, my friend.
Yeah, because sometimes you look at something in life, and you're like, this is challenging. I can't do it, but I need to overcome this challenge because that's who I was truly meant to be. Or do you say, maybe I wasn't meant for this thing, and you move
maybe
on to
something
else? Maybe
I was just meant to look like a bug-eyed crazy
person.
Yeah,
right. And somehow work that into my fucking, you know, charm. I don't know. Anyways.
It works for Saru.
You just start yelling at customers.
Yeah.
Like, listen.
I've done that a couple of times. one thing, this was also kind of a tangent, is that when Tarka says to... Book, science has many purposes. I mean, Book does go try again, which is like, that was a bullshit answer. But that's a bullshit answer anyways, regardless of not only is it a deflection, but it's just a bullshit answer. Because science doesn't really have a purpose. Science is a methodology.
Yes, exactly.
And if it were to have a purpose, if you were to have to prescribe a purpose to science, it would just be the sort of concept of finding the truth, basically. Right.
Or even more in a more
nuanced
way.
Explaining thing. Yeah, truth is a little bit too floofity, dude. But explaining
philosophy.
If you want to get super semantic about it, you can be like, science is about demonstrating what isn't true.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true.
Because that's a lot of what it comes down to is we can prove all these things aren't true, and so the remaining ideas seem as good as any because we can't say they're not true yet. Sometimes it's the opposite, but I think that's going to be important. I think this is all going to play into what's going going on forward. And who knows, by next week, all of our predictions will be either proven correct and insightful, or
they will.
We and everyone else will have forgotten about them as they present new information that takes it in a different direction.
So I'm surprised that it didn't occur to me that it could be a spore drive. So without having thought of that idea, and that makes a lot of sense, actually, I was thinking when he grabbed his neck, because that definitely has to have something to do with it, because the timing... Yeah, I mean, it seems likely.
We need clarity whether that's that, because one idea that I've had and other people have mentioned is that maybe that's related to one of those, you know, the standard old prison, you know, Orion neck clamp punishment zapper things that they can remote control zap you with.
For a brief second, I was like, is that like a Borg thing? And then I was thinking, well, if it was a Borg thing, he'd probably have a bunch of other fucked up
shit.
Is it
the neural link thing where they jack in and steal your brain waves or something?
And like the Borg's MO wouldn't be to manipulate a big fucking like space anomaly. That's not really how they do things.
Presumably.
But I was wondering, it's like, are they, and before that scene happened, I was like, is this going to be a lead into the Klingons eventually? It's like, no, it's not. Yeah. It's definitely not. Klingons
for a minute there, I was like, wait a minute.
No, yeah, and then for a minute, I was Klingons. For a minute, I was Borg. And then I think the Spore Drive, I think the Orion Syndicate, that makes most sense, actually.
And again, we'll see where it goes. The Spore Drive right now seems to make sense for just with the basic information they've presented, as well as who they've declared they don't think are involved. And so they have the litany of previous Star Trek characters / species / beings that could have conceivably done this. The Iconians with their gateways, because they can traverse potentially even multiple galaxies as far as we know.
Right.
The Q, obviously.
The funny thing is they bring up all these species, you know, the Metrons, Iconians, Q Continuum. It's almost as if somebody else owns the property to Klingons, because, you know, like another company owns the property to Klingons.
They sold Klingons to Pepsi.
Yeah, exactly, because they're mentioning all these species, but for some reason we're not allowed to think about the Klingons. And why?
Of course, the Klingons wouldn't. I think that in this case, it's not so. The omission is not as apparent, because Klingons wouldn't have this power.
Yeah. Anymore.
They were naming races that have been demonstrated to do godlike things. In other words, unpredictable physics breaking things.
And maybe the Klingons in the future are just like off doing their own thing. But you'd at least think a Discovery at some point would be like, hey, whatever happened to those Klingons? And they'd be like, oh, they're gone off somewhere else doing something else.
I think they're, you know, because we've discussed this whole absent Klingon mystery a lot now. And I do recall, could be wrong, I recall seeing some screen grab sometime during the third season where, you know, early on they're showing the maps of what the current situation is.
Oh, was there like a Klingon territory?
And I think there was an area that was called like the Klingon Zone or Klingon Territory. They, you know, they had other famous landmarks like Earth and other stuff listed out.
Earth, wind, fire?
Yeah, they had all of those things. They didn't have water.
No, just Earth, wind, and fire.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It is weird.
Do they have wood?
Would you do that?
I would.
So we'll...
Yes. You have wood.
Yes, I would.
The whole deal with Targa and what's going on, he seems shady.
Targa.
I don't know if he's shady just because that actor frequently plays shady characters. He's acting shady.
He's from
Ryza. Like an asshole. He's manipulating people. He's up to something. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it some sort of time paradox where the experiment they're doing somehow goes back in time and causes the DMA? I don't know.
You got that DMA.
Maybe not.
He's a real scientist. He's like a real scientist buckaroo type.
The thing is
buckaroo,
that
he's a buckaroo.
The way they're playing it is right kind of down that line where if he was even more overtly prickish and sinister and evil, you'd say, oh, they're leading us astray. It's a trick. He's not actually, not the evil one.
Right.
If he were a little bit more on the nicer side, you would start to think, oh, I don't know, there's something shady about this dude. Maybe he's the evil guy. But they're right down the middle. It could really kind of go either way. I like that he's sticking around and that this is a new character to sort of agitate and aggravate people and cause a ruckus.
So when Stamets was hesitant about having this guy around originally, when the Admiral Vance, what's his name?
Admiral Charles Vance.
Charles Vance. At first, it seemed like Stamets was just, because Stamets has some insecurities, right? Like, I thought originally, I just thought in general, he didn't want to have anyone helping him. He was kind of saying, I can handle this all on my own.
He wants the credit. I mean, he did do all the work on that stuff.
Yeah, right. But it turns out it's more specific than that. It's that he specifically has a problem with Tarka. you know, he was like, oh, Tarka built on my work. He never contacted me. Oh, he specifically avoided me. He doesn't talk to me at all. And so it went from he doesn't. I'm wondering if someone else came to help him, if he would feel as insecure about it. Whereas Tarka, I think he just specifically didn't like Tarka. Like I said, they played it to seem like he's insecure about everyone, but it seemed like specifically Tarka that is revealed later.
It would have been
that he was fucked up. And it's funny because it's insecure because as soon as Tarka compliments him, suddenly Stamets is on board.
Yes. To me, it seems clear that Stamets has an ego issue. He has had that going back a long way. He doesn't want people interfering with his stuff. He was willing
to talk
was willing to talk back to Lorca, who everyone else was terrified of, and all that shit. So he wants to be in charge. And if he's in charge, then he feels happy. If he's placated or, you know, people revere him, he's cool with that. He's cool with having Tilly around or whatever. Remember, he didn't get along with Jet Reno at first either.
Right.
Because she didn't care. She was like, yeah, I'm clever too, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And he had to build that relationship with her and build a mutual respect with her and go through some shit together, right? So this guy, Tarka, everyone's just calling him this massive genius dude who's doing all this genius stuff, and the Federation is giving him all the projects to do, all the cool stuff. And Stamets isn't doing that stuff. They didn't put Stamets. And now, by the way, guess what? It makes sense that Stamets wouldn't be in charge because Stamets is from fucking 900 years in the past. I don't care how brilliant he is. He's not going to be 100% up to speed on all the current like, nitty gritty stuff.
Yeah, right. It's like if you have somebody's ancient knowledge and you're looking at that stuff and you're building on it. You don't go to that person and have a conversation because they're dead.
Yeah.
As far as Tarka's concerned, like this guy's from the past and Tarka's Tarka's in Tarka's time and he's doing what is now.
Right.
And
which also includes like new technologies to work with and stuff. Where there's no way Stamets could understand how to,
because they got all kinds of wacky stuff, man.
They got tons of wacky stuff.
Man. They got so much wacky stuff, programmable matter and shit.
You don't even know, man.
I wanna know what Tarka was flipping around when he was all, remember he was like spinning, it looked like keys, like a keychain, but it wasn't, or like one of those giant things that open beer bottles with, like a beer bottle
it was just loose mashed potatoes.
He replicated the mashed potatoes, and it was cool because he was like cold, and it's like, well, wait a minute, cold is like, well, he's gonna stick his fingers.
It's
because he's a fucking genius.
I thought ahead.
You know, twice now, Stamets has done to the whole jump to conclusions.
All I need is
jump
one to pee.
Jump to the conclusions thing. When like the Vulcan, like a couple episodes ago, he was at the Vulcan Science Council or whatever, up 3,000 miles above planet in super, super weird cube where there was no wind, but that was awesome somehow. It was awesome, by the way. When the Vulcans, at one point, they closed their eyes to meditate on the hypothesis that Stamets presented about the primordial worm, and he was like, now's not an appropriate time for sleeping. It's man, read the room, you know?
I know.
But he did that again when Tarka ordered mashed potatoes. He's like, we're on the clock here, so if you need to eat something. It's like, obviously he wasn't fucking eating something.
He would have gotten more peas if he
would have gotten more peas, and he wouldn't have ordered cold mashed potatoes.
I know.
No, I only like cold mashed potatoes with one pea. That's what I eat.
I'm a mad genius.
Yeah, did he really think he's just being impatient and he's not reading the room. He's too self-involved to read the room and figure out what's really going on because he's too stuck in his own head or some shit.
It's true.
He's obsessed with his own work.
He played Jump to Conclusions, Matt.
Obsessed.
It's a Matt where you jump to conclusions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He had that.
He needs a jump to conclusions.
He's got that back in his quarters.
Yeah. His quarters.
Dr. Hugh had to put it away.
He had to roll it up.
I hang out in my semis.
What?
Not my quarters, my semis.
With your semi?
I thought you were going to say like a dime, because a quarter is a coin.
Right.
In every country.
I was thinking of like quarterfinal, semifinal.
Most countries just have 20 cents. They don't have 25 cents.
Canada, they have loonies.
They got quarters.
And they got toonies.
Loonies and toonies.
Toonies is $2.
They got Beezus for foonies.
They do have Beezus for foonies.
And it's funny about like all the stereotypes about Canada and hockey. On their dollar, on their paper money, they have little like kids playing hockey on a frozen lake scene.
I don't think I've ever seen Canadian paper money.
Yeah, yeah. It's on the currency, like some kids playing hockey. So it's kind of funny that
it's their sport.
Yeah, they love it.
They love it. Those Canadians love hockey.
No, actually, my stepdad does not like hockey, but he's like
a
you should clarify that he is Canadian.
Yeah.
He's Canadian. Yeah.
That's right. He's a Quebecois.
Quebecois, Canadian.
Anyways, you learned a little something about me. Now you can dox me, so have fun with that.
Don't dox Dan.
Fucking assholes. You're all assholes anyway. Just kidding. Only the people who don't dox me are not assholes.
All right.
It's up to you if you're an asshole or not. Do you want to dox me? You're an asshole. If you don't, you're not an asshole. It's up to you.
I could read out your address, but
I'm going to make I'm going to summarily judge your entire person on my own accord.
You're a doxer.
And if I judge you poorly, it's your own fault. You ever know those scenes where like the villain's all like, this was your own fault.
That's called a teacher.
It's your own fault. The reason
or
I'm
a parent.
The reason
Why
I'm,
are you hitting yourself?
The reason I'm bombing the earth is because of the decisions you made. This is your fault. This is your choice. You chose not to tell me the secret to where your father's hiding out so I could kill him. You didn't tell me, so I'm going to bomb the earth. That's your fault. It's like, oh no, it's not your fault for fucking bombing the earth. You know what I'm talking about when shows do that?
I know what
you're
talking about.
Movies do
that?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I'm trying to displace blame.
I've seen TV.
Yeah, me too.
well,
Tarka, talking about Star Trek. Tarka and the Stamets talking about Star Trek.
We probably covered all the Tarka stuff and move on to this.
Where did that song come from, anyway?
Which song?
It's like some song and they're singing about baseball players or something.
What are you talking about?
It was on The Simpsons, too. They had talking about softball.
They had, like, special lyrics for that Simpsons episode.
Yeah. Originally, it's different.
I don't know what it's called.
Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we'll shift from Simpsons talk back into Star Trek.
We'll go back to Star Trek.
All right, we'll be right back. All right, we're back.
Where did we go?
We went on break.
What did you do during your break, Jesse?
I invested in Bitcoin and Ethereum.
I looked over there.
Looked over there. Patrick, you invested in Bitcoin and urethra? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I put Bitcoin in my urethra.
Put it right up my urethra.
I heard that's the cool thing
that's
to do today.
That's really conceptual.
Yeah. It's sort of hedging your bets.
That's how you make money.
Cryptocurrency.
Hedging your bets.
All right. So we talked about Tarka. We talked about Stamets to some degree or another. I think we covered most of the Stamets stuff, probably. He did have that really great scene with Hugh in the end. And what I really liked about the scene between Hugh and Stamets was they were both helping each other. Mm. I like it when it's not one partner helping the other. That's fine. Sometimes that makes sense for the story, but this was where they were talking to each other, and in talking to each other, they were both helping each other. It's like, this is a very healthy relationship.
Yeah.
They have like the best relationship on the ship or something.
Yeah. Like near the beginning of the episode, when Culber is going off to, you know, help people, and Stamets is like, you need to rest or whatever at the beginning, that could have gone either way, because
Culber wasn't communicating at that time.
No,
he walked out.
Right.
Basically.
And because Stamets has historically been always the one that's kind of sort of need to chill his toot a little bit.
Yeah.
And Culber's always the sensible kind
of
one.
He's got a toot.
It's easy. At first I was thinking, is Stamets, are they trying to play this off as Stamets is kind of nagging at Culber to like spend more time with him? Cause that happens too in stories where it's like, someone's like, you spend so much time with other people, you need to spend more time with me, which is a reasonable thing. It's
but they didn't
what
go
about
that way.
What about your own family? But they didn't go that way. Stamets wasn't doing it for any purposes, selfish purposes. He was straight up like, you need to sleep. And Culber presented like he usually does, which is very sensible. It's like, people need help and I need to help them. And it makes sense. But at this point, you could tell he was breaking a little bit.
And Stamets even says, well, can you take some of my advice? And Culber's just like, later. I'll see you fucking later.
Yeah, right.
But then to transfer over to Culber, we've been seeing this interesting arc with Culber, where in the first few episodes, you know, all the episodes he's been helping people, but in the first few episodes they're just sort of showing Culber helping people and being really great at it, and then you start to see little cracks. I think one of the first ones maybe was when we see Culber, was it last episode, I believe, when Culber and Book are talking, right? And Book sort of turns some of those questions back on Culber, and Culber's like, oh, I don't know, my life's a little fucked up, but don't worry about it.
He revealed personal information, which is something I guess you're not supposed to do when you're a therapist.
And so Culber, here now, like you said, Dan, now we start seeing more cracks in that foundation where he's still offering people good advice, but clearly something's not going well with him. Which we then is revealed with when he talks to David Cronenberg.
Well, back to your point a second ago about, you know, him cracking and stuff. there was a time when Tilly was talking to Saru, and Saru was like, he says, what do you hope to gain from novelty or whatever? Yes. Now, I don't know if the writers necessarily intended this to be true. I took the suggestion of changing your daily patterns as kind of like a superficial sort of advice.
Yeah, you mentioned that on that.
Yeah, I mentioned that on that episode. And I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong. I'm not a psychologist. I don't know. Like, I could just be inventing bullshit, and I'm wrong.
Towards the end of that conversation on that particular episode of the podcast, you shifted your view somewhat to say that you could at least see how it could be potentially helpful in the context of Tilly.
Right. But I was all, I did. But I was also wondering if maybe it's like Culber is giving this, and I think I'm reading too much into this, honestly, but I'm wondering if Culber was maybe suggesting she changes her daily patterns, and it was superficial advice because he's a doctor, not a therapist.
Well, he's trained to be our understanding is that he is trained to be a counselor. Mm-hmm. That role has
but
elevated.
It's probably like doctor school is like he took some doctor a few counseling. He probably took a few counseling classes.
He took a few electives in counseling.
Yeah, I don't think he's Deanna Troi counseling, you know.
I don't know. I think he's qualified. I'm going to assume he's qualified. I'm going to assume further that it wasn't that the writers didn't think of this role for him previously, but it was that they've gone through so much tragedy, and by moving to the future, the need for a ship's counselor on a skeleton crew became more acute. And so he sort of fell into that role.
Right.
Because they still have that other doctor. Don't see Dr. Pollard. We just don't see her very often.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is that he's kind of fell into that role. And I'm not saying he wasn't good at it, but it seems like he's trying to figure out his way around focusing more on being a counselor. And that sort of shows by now in this episode when it all comes to a head where he's like, now, honestly, I think I might be reading a little too much into that first part about a few episodes back.
I would say I think you may be just based on the fact that he seems to be competent at what he's doing insofar as people seem to make progress when they do talk to him. Their lives do improve. The problem is, which is basically what David Cronenberg says, is that he's got his own issues that are unaddressed, and that no matter how good he is at helping people right now, if he doesn't address those issues, then he is not going to, there's going to be a point in time where he will no longer be a help to those people and potentially even become a disadvantage to them, because you could imagine him getting all bitter.
And we haven't even seen it on the show really from his viewpoint, what he went through. You see it through Stamets,
right.
There's a little bit, but the whole like last season, nobody really talks about the fact that, you know, he was dead and he came back.
Yeah, and I thought
they had all these other wacky adventures that sort of outweighed that.
And I thought that was a pretty poignant point that Kovich brought up about the threat of what the threat of death, how it can make one scramble for meaning. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easier to say that there's no point to life in the universe, and it's all when you haven't faced a real possibility of death. It's easy to look at that logically and say this is this. When you sort of face the possibility of death, it's kind of like your mind goes into some kind of self-preservation overdrive to try to convince itself that there is a point, you know, because it's common for people who are facing death. You know, they start going to church or they get into weird.
Or stop going to church.
Or stop going to church. Or they do weird.
They reevaluate their perspective.
Yeah, they do weird alternative medicine or stuff like that, you know, whether alternative to what you're used to doing, like you said. And so you have to convince yourself that there is a point, and you have to start working on it and finding it quick, because you're like, oh shit, I'm on a clock.
Well, I think because the default assumption, the reason why there is a quest to find meaning is because that experience results in a default presumption that there is no meaning, and that's scary, right?
Right.
And so maybe some people can handle that. Other people have to grow to handle that. Other people yet reach out for meaning. It is a version of survivor bias, which is what we're seeing with Book, right? Which is that's a thing you hear about, you read about, which is people who survive, you know, military engagements, car accidents, natural disasters, etc. People who survive something that people close to them do not often have this experience of like, why am I the one who survived? Mm-hmm. Why did I deserve to survive more than this other person? Is there a reason for me being alive? And with Culber, it's the sci-fi Star Trek twist on that, which is, it's not that he was in a bad car accident. It's that he fucking died and came back and then went to the future and all this other shit he's had to deal with nonstop. And he's been given this outlet in that his role permits him to have a purpose for the people around him. And now that's starting to fray because it it was a band-aid. It was a mental band-aid for a while to say, like, well, here's why I've got no choice. I've got to help these people get through their terrible days. And he's using up the whatever store of mental energy he has. And I think that's what David Cronenberg's getting at, right? He's getting at, dude, this shit, you can't keep this up forever. And it kind of looks like shit's starting to fall apart right now.
Yeah. Even if you believe there's nothing after death, it doesn't really... That doesn't mean you won't be desperate to find meaning, which is strange because if there's
nothing... Maybe more so.
Because if there's nothing after death, how can there be meaning to anything, right? That kind of question. The threat of death can create sort of logical dissonance that that can be difficult to reconcile.
Are you threatening me?
Yes, I'm threatening you. You're Cornholio.
I am Cornholio.
And so that's why, like I was talking about sort of putting your mind into overdrive like Colbert did, was trying to like... Be like, there's a purpose that I died. I could be gone soon. Suddenly I can't put off the idea of like making a difference anymore. Not that he ever did, but now it's like, I have to do it in overdrive because survivor bias, there must be a meaning behind why I'm here. So it's my responsibility to like, you know, make sure that I like,
because you're not supposed to come back.
Fulfill my destiny.
You're not supposed to come back. Everybody else died.
Yeah. And so how do you do that if you're a person how do you do that if you're a person that believes life is sort of a series of meaningless and incidental events?
Life is a series of compromises.
Yeah, from King of the Hill. If you believe that life is a series of meaningless and incidental events, and then you die and come back, you can still believe that. But at the same time, part of your brain, your emotional side of your brain, creates a dissonance saying like, well, I logically believe that, but at the same time, something about my body is telling me that I need to do something differently because of some kind of weird survival instinct.
The thing, though, is the solution is, I mean, to my mind, pretty obvious. In the context of Star Trek, in the context of everything we've learned about
characters. You're about to make
characters.
A joke.
whatever would make you think that?
Why would you think that, Dan?
Whatever about the cadence of my speech would make you think that? No, I mean, quite seriously, you know, you're dealing with all this mental health stuff. All he needs to do is I'm sure they have it on Discovery. He's got to go down to Cetacean Ops and find his porpoise. Porpoise.
Yeah.
He's got to find his porpoise.
Find his porpoise.
Find his porpoise.
Find his porpoise.
I think you're about to tell a joke. I said something slightly different. I said something slightly different than the way you were talking.
I mean, we were talking about death and like finding meaning, which is a pretty heavy topic. So it only makes sense for you to sort of try to find some levity out of that situation.
Did you say levity as a weight joke? Because you said it's a heavy topic, like levitation.
He's doing it again. He's doing it again.
No, you said the joke this time. I merely observed.
You're making
it
funny.
I think death makes Patrick uncomfortable.
No, I love death. I love death.
See, he's doing it again.
He's always wallowing in it.
Kill all the motherfuckers.
He doesn't want to talk about death, so he jokes to guard himself against the idea of death.
Talking about death for a long time. I thought there's a limited amount of podcast real estate.
I want to talk about death the whole time.
It's like every podcast we talk about death.
No. And then Colbert died and he got Colbert sad did. About it. It's all, I really like it. It's really well done. I think the writing is overall good in these parts. This episode I thought was tightly written. The plotting was interesting. Again, like the pattern they've developed is to have the DMA is sort of a part of the story, but it's also not like, yes, they want to solve this mystery of the DMA. They're learning more about it, but really you're learning about the characters. You're learning about this new Targa guy. He's scheming in some way. We don't know good or bad yet, how he's affecting Stamets. And
there's a little side adventure.
Yeah. And there's the side adventure with the book and Burnham.
Right. Of course, those are the two that are going to do some crazy shit where you're like, we're going to rescue these prisoners off at the pole.
And another very Star Trek style thing to do. They're on the Akali, an Akali asteroid colony that looked badass because we always see the same, you know, blue or yellow planet. Now in Discovery.
Sometimes green or purple.
And it's all chained together with tubes.
Yeah. I liked the cut when it was, they were introducing the idea of the model, like Tarka was introducing the idea of like, let's make a model. And then it's cut right to them, like shooting at those bug things. Something about that felt really fun.
And it wasn't a Star Wars wipe, like that fucking weird Star Wars wipe from the last episode.
Yeah. But, I thought that part of the episode was kind of fun. I was talking before about sometimes I felt Discovery was like a little too heavy and maybe not enough fun. And maybe I'm just simply looking at it from the lens of what was from before, because it is, I mean, admittedly,
from the before times.
From admittedly, start the Discovery is a bit heavier, but you know that could just be the different sensibilities in production. You know, like the music, they choose.
It's a more melodramatic style.
The shots they take, but I mean, basically. The ideas they approached in this episode were the same kind of ideas they would approach in a Star Trek show. It's almost like they took
TNG, this whole prison rescue thing with the asshole administrator.
Yeah.
All of this, this is something
That guy sucked.
You would see a version of this story on TNG.
Right.
It would only have like one beetle and it would look like a remote control car.
That's the other thing is they have higher production values. So whereas they would normally probably just show like some invisible enemy shooting from behind a corner, they actually showed them shooting like all these beetles, you know, and stuff like that. And so it was,
beetle.
I really got a vibe of like, yeah, that TNG vibe, but it's interesting how you present and direct those ideas can give a different vibe to the same sort of idea.
I like this plot line. I did not like the banter. I thought the only thing poorly
was weird banter. I didn't know why they were reminiscing.
The content was fine.
I just didn't
idea of a reminiscing, but the banter didn't work. It was the only part of the episode I thought was poorly written and out of character, like book saying, it's, like, you've got to be kidding me or whatever, you know, like those
it
things.
It seemed like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like,
I wasn't sure what the point of it,
it
was.
It seemed like a sitcom style, like, oh, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Or what now?
You got to be kidding me.
Most of that banter, some of it worked. I'm not complaining about it. It was just that it threw me off a little, especially a lot of
it's much more fun now that we're fucking.
Yeah.
That's what they said at one point.
That's what they said.
Yeah, yeah, they did say that verbatim.
Yeah, I didn't see like the banter.
And it's probably true.
Like maybe the banter was just to fill time. Maybe I feel like it was just to remind you that stuff happened or something.
I have faith in you. I knew you'd do it and stuff.
It was telling the viewer, it's like, this is where they were then. Look at where they are now or something. But I don't know. It felt a little weird. I wasn't terrible, but I didn't really.
I'm pretty sure especially with Book getting influenced by Targa, that as well as some of the other things going Tarka that's going on here.
He's not a Klingon dog thing.
Toby Targ.
I think they are setting us up for a conflict between Book and Burnham.
Yes.
We see more of that in this episode where there's a more overt disagreement, but there's been a few in terms of what their strategy is. Right from the very first episode, more lighthearted early on, but there's increasing disagreement in terms of right thing to do.
Book is going to become Raphael and Burnham's going to be Leonardo in the TMNT movie.
And Jet Reno is Donatello.
I liked when Jet Reno got introduced all casually, like she'd never left. Yeah. I was like, yeah, right
she's
on.
She's in the back somewhere.
Yeah, right. It's like, awesome.
She's always buttering around.
I'm really great that she...
And they brought up Tilly briefly just to remind... I don't know if that was a reminder that it's like, yeah, she's gone or...
And we haven't forgotten her.
Yeah, we haven't forgotten
her. It's not a Tasha Yar situation. Yeah.
This episode didn't have Detmer or Owasa Conning. Another episode.
There's a couple episodes in a row,
It's interesting. When they got rid of Tilly, that's when they brought back Jet Reno, and they introduced this Tarka character. So that's probably, I wonder if that has...
This was
COVID limitations.
Science-focused episode, not a bridge-focused episode.
Well, the Tilly, it seems like Tilly's not going to be in the show for a while. Do you think? It seems, and it made sense. It made more sense with the Saru thing, because that was a season cliffhanger kind of deal. Not a cliffhanger, but it was a season ender.
Season.
So, this is a mid-season.
This is like mid, so it's like... Yeah, it's not,
not
even it's, so it seems almost, like it seems like something either came up suddenly or because the only other time mid season this happened was with Giorgio, and it's kind of confusing what's going to happen with Tilly.
I think
she's going to get her own show.
I know. That's what you were saying last week. We don't know. It's possible, actually.
It's just strange.
It's totally possible.
Because the only other explanation I could think is that for some reason she had an emergency and had to duck out of the show for a while.
Who knows? Maybe she was having a baby or something. I don't know.
That's a possibility.
We wouldn't know these things necessarily. But whatever the out of universe reason is, it's just a reminder, right? That she's still floating around out there, but.
In space, you float.
Space.
They were on the planet thing. So there were two.
The planet thing.
I thought this was a really good episode. I really enjoyed a lot of it. There was two other things. Like the dialogue thing was kind of like, it's not a big deal. It's kind of weird. I don't know the point, but whatever. Two things. The main thing is the main thing that I know it was done for dramatic purposes, but it's like, why couldn't they have waited until the evacuations were complete, which was going to be 4 hours? To start creating the model, You know what I mean? Because they couldn't use the transport power because they were using it. And it's like, well, they try to have it both ways. They say, we only have 4 hours to remove these people. Yeah. Oh no, only 4 hours. And then suddenly 4 hours.
All of a sudden it was 3.5 hours.
Somehow, so 4 hours wasn't enough time to do what they needed to do. That was the emergency. But now 4 hours is too long to wait to do this model mm-hmm. situation. They could have waited till after that was over.
I agree.
The other one that I'm sort of conflicted on is the sort of what happened to Felix.
Right.
I'm not sure what the message they were trying to send by letting him die. And Book, to the credit, Book was right. Like, Book was like, this is wrong. And it was wrong. And
I don't necessarily think it was wrong. I think it's difficult to answer. There are some questions where, yes, of course, if you're from one perspective, you'll say this is 100% right. And there's another perspective, it's 100% wrong. I think for a lot of people, it's in the middle, which is probably where Burnham is, where on the one hand, yes, she wants to save his life.
But she,
on the other hand, she doesn't want to take his agency away.
Right. And that's totally a fair point to make. But in terms of the message the show is presenting,
it's like, is the murderer cool?
Is it saying it's okay to commit suicide? You know what I mean? Because he says it's because of penance. Yeah, but one could
he deserves the punishment.
But one could also say, like, stop being such a sad Sally.
Right.
Or a sad
smile more.
Sad Sam.
Smile more.
Sad
just be more positive.
He's taking like some kind of Russian novel approach to it. It's like, I'm going to accept my punishment.
Yeah. And
I have to do it this way or else, like.
And so many stories, though, that I guess maybe is more of a Western thing, I guess, is to say, like, stop crying in your mashed potato, your cold mashed potatoes or whatever. He's like, get your shit together. You did this. It happened. Move on. You have a lot to live for. Stop being such a whiny William or whatever.
A whiny William.
Classic whiny William.
So it's like,
you're being one of them.
You could
whiny William.
You could say it's noble for taking penance, but you could also flip the coin and say, like, just get over it, man.
Flip
like
the bean.
Move on. I mean, I don't ever want to tell someone to
the
get
LL Bean.
It's rude to tell someone to get over whatever they're going through. That's a rude thing to say because it takes everyone their own time. But when it comes to death, it's kind of like you need to find a way to manage this
situation.
You do,
yeah, that's true.
And so I'm not sure what the message the show itself was sending by doing this. Because they both presented sides, but I didn't know. And you could say, well, he was just taking the risk because it isn't a certainty. But you know he hopes that he'll die in that situation, you know. So I just don't know what... I don't know
what's going to happen.
I'm not sure what the show was getting at by
yeah, not 100%. For me, that was more of an interesting, difficult to answer dilemma.
Yeah.
And that just because the story ended up a certain way doesn't mean it's correct. And in fact, perhaps this will continue to feed into this growing conflict between Book and Burnham in this divergence in philosophy, because Book, due to survivorship sadness, seems really to want to save each and every single person who's going to be affected by DMA. And you kind of get the impression that Book wouldn't have cared if he'd gotten this guy off the planet. Book wouldn't have necessarily cared if, like, the daughter of the guy he killed, you know, slashed this guy's throat open.
Yeah.
But he wanted him to be not killed by the DMA.
I guess that's what it was.
Right.
That's fair.
So we'll have to see
I think I see what you're saying about it being a dilemma, plus also it's sort of meant to sort of reveal, do stuff to Book and help with his character. I think the side effect was it was a kind of a confusing message.
I think in a more subtle way, it's also meant to demonstrate or illustrate the change in Burnham, because two or three seasons ago, I think Burnham would have straight up hit the guy on the head and dragged him out, taking him back. And now she's not doing that. She's thinking about things in a bit of a different, higher order way. She's at least recognizing that there's not an easy answer to it. Book thinks the answer is easy. She does not. Right. That's how I interpret it. In any case.
So they got Doxa got her Lilogi orb back. You know what they should have done? I mean, what do you think's on that orb? You think if you press the button on, like, the particular leaf, it'll give you a bio of that person? Is that they don't really explain what the Lilogi
or what about
Lilogi does?
What about, like, if we get together with, like, one of your cousins and you turn on, did they, like, connect, like, to the trees?
Do they entangle with each other?
Like a Voltron?
Like, no, like kissing cousins?
Or just
cousins?
I mean, just
what?
Like, you
like
know,
maybe you hold the balls together and it'll tell you whether or not you're far enough removed cousins to fuck each other.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. That could be a good.
Are you allowed to kiss?
That maybe could be that a was secondary the, maybe, function.
Maybe
of it.
It didn't occur to me.
Maybe it was the original primary function.
Yeah, because you know
but that got lost to time.
Because you know society starts small. You
but
know,
they come up with a lot of wacky stuff on. You know, it still sort of fits in your sort of Star Trek flavor of an interesting cultural device.
But now it seems like in Discovery you have aliens with different cultural things, as mm-hmm. opposed to in previous Star Treks you had funny noses and ears, yeah. or Delta Quadrant gross faces.
Weird, you know, hair.
What's up with the people in K's the Quadrant? Everybody's fucked up and gross in the Delta Quadrant. It's just,
what were those? What was it, that species of people that had hair that looked like it had leaves in it?
Kazon.
The Kazon? Was it the Kazon? Okay, yeah. So
a few people in the Delta Quadrant just have like weird like lettuce on their
head.
Like, is it like a hat? Is it their hair?
Like monstrous clowns.
I was thinking about that Lelogi orb and the concept of holding onto material possessions, because on the one hand, like, some people are really into hoarding a lot of stuff and other people are really into throwing away everything they get. When is it okay to obsessively hold onto a thing for a long time?
Well, now you're going to open up a whole bag of cultural anthropology.
When is it okay to, like,
In terms of which objects do humans imbue some sort of value?
And which are, well,
I mean, we imbue value in all our objects, but which is appropriate? Differing value.
Like, do we hold on to a broken toothbrush for, because every item we touch, every item that's in our life has a history to it. So you could say, like, this broken toothbrush that I don't use anymore, and I'm not one of these people, but you could look at it and say, I remember when I got this. I remember why it broke. That's the meaning it holds to me, is it reminds me of that point of time in my life. So, but common sensibilities of where we grow up, anyway, say you should throw those things away. Yeah. But on the
my grandma keep every single National Geographic, because you never know when you're going to need to look up something from an old National Geographic.
Yeah, right. That's a different sort of perspective. That's a different reason. It's like when you never know when it's going to be useful perspective. Yeah, that's like the different one.
What happens in Rhodesia?
Well, the Logi orb is like, takes that to the extreme of like, I'm carrying around this fucking thing forever because it holds history.
Yeah, it's the equivalent to a diary or a library or a family,
like I said,
family
that,
religious
but
book.
But that broken toothbrush may have meaning to it.
Yeah,
but everybody's different.
Yeah, but you're asking when? Okay, yeah. No, throw out the fucking toothbrush.
Well, I'm not asking
you. Asking me.
No,
I don't
I'm
know.
Not. I'm
it's
not
a
asking.
Subjective thing.
I'm just.
It's got germs on it, dude.
It's got germs on it.
Coming,
I did it.
Coming in the new year, a new podcast. It's going to be Dan. Dan's hosting a solo podcast, and he's just going to bring items in from his home and talk about which germs are on it.
These crackers were in my basement.
How are they able? How so? Like back when there was the plague and stuff. You know, people got the plague.
Oh yeah.
They recognize that this plague got people sick. So how come it took them so long to accept germs? They've already got this seemingly invisible.
Well, they thought it was like the miasma
of Christianity.
Theory.
Because they thought the plague was due to like Christianity, like them like God was killing them for some reason.
Because they didn't have any signs.
The super short, extremely simplified, 80% incorrect version of events is that illness was often associated with spiritual events.
Right.
And then where it started shifting a little bit, where it shifted to the miasma theory, which was the bad smells theory, was when rich people started getting fucked up by the plague and other things, because they're like, wait a second, we're rich people. God loves us.
Yeah.
Or the ghosts love us or whoever. So
we're
so now
not
they,
covered in shit.
They needed a different mechanism. And the cool thing about just the way people develop knowledge is the miasma theory was the wrong mechanism. They developed the wrong mechanism. However, it was still helpful because it turns out that places that smell like rotting, shitty grossness are the places where there's bacteria and viruses lurking about.
And that's
right?
Because your body's smart.
So by staying away, by cleaning up those places, as Dr. Jon Snow famously found, Dr. Jon Snow, he's often credited with being the first person to do a sort of a scientific
You know nothing, Jon Snow!
Apparently this guy knew something.
He was the one who figured out that certain wells in London I think it was cholera or whatever it was causing, he was the one that figured out, if I get people to stop drinking from this well, then nobody gets sick anymore. And so
didn't attribute it to germs and washing your hands
until they figured out germs later, because you had to invent a microscope before you could see germs. And then there's a whole bunch of funny stuff. If you want to look up, if you want to have a good time, look up what they first thought was going on.
I want to have a good time.
The first people who invented microscopes, were primarily
nerds.
Men. And immediately when men got these microscopes, they immediately started looking at their semen.
Yeah, bad.
And go look on Wikipedia or other articles. You're going to read some hilarious.
They blasted it like right onto the microscope.
About all the theories when dudes started looking at their
microscope.
Own. When they started looking at their own jizz in a microscope, all sorts of theories about what was going on in there and what those little sperm were swimming around. Go read about it. Read all about it. It's quite hilarious.
Okay, so back to the point of when I was asking about when is it okay to hold on to something or not. I guess I wasn't really asking for an answer. I was just
Do you keep all your microscope slides with semen samples from every day? Keep those in a Dexter style little.
I don't have enough room for all that.
Fair enough.
Okay, let's take a quick break.
That was break worthy.
Quick break, and then we will wrap up the show with all our final brilliance. All right, we'll be right back. Hey Dan.
Hey what?
Are we back?
We're back. I just wanted to say that real quick that they should have put an entry for Felix in the Leilogi orb, this guy stole this orb and it went missing for a while.
He'd have like a big axe in his hand and he'd be chopping down the tree.
And it should say in the Leilogi orb. What are you talking about?
It's a family tree. And he'd be hacking.
A bunch of people online were complaining that they should have been like at the top of the tree.
Oh,
right? I'm not going to worry too much.
But if you can read into the entries onto the tree, like there should be a small dialogue about Felix saying that he stole the orb, it went away. Because I was thinking, because Doxica, she was supposed to put her name in there a while ago. And it could note that she put her name in late because this went missing because some guy stole it and he ended up paying penance by dying because he felt so guilty. That's something worthwhile to remember, right?
Pirates of Penzance.
That's something worthwhile, like you'd want to remember in your family. It's like, wow, this guy like did a fucked up thing, but he really felt bad about it. We should remember him for that.
I don't know about that.
This guy stole my VCR when I was a kid, gave it back when I was 40.
But then he killed himself due to guilt. That's humanity right there, man. In a nutshell, that's all humanity is that right there. Stealing your VCR and then committing suicide because you feel so guilty about it.
So the Akali, do you either of you recognize where we've seen the Akali before?
What's the Akali?
The Akali is the people who were in charge of, not all the people in the prison were Akali, most of them were, the administrator was an Akali.
Are they part of the Emerald Chain? Because they were talking about
they were under the dominion of the Emerald Chain.
Because that's why they followed Emerald Chain rule prisoners.
They seem to still like some of that Emerald Chain
The administrator guy was your classic, I'm an asshole and I don't care. The Emerald Chain's in charge. I'll do whatever say.
Does everyone in the Emerald Chain believe in Darlin? Thank Darlin, you're Darlin.
They're all a bunch of little Darlin.
Remember, he said, "Thank Darlin, you're here."
Yeah, yeah,
or whatever. Darlin is that an Emerald Chain god? I don't know.
The Akali.
I don't know what the hell they're talking.
The Akali
about.
Were a species, a pre-warp species. In fact, a fairly Middle Ages species that Captain Archer. And the crew of the NX-01 Enterprise stumble across, I believe...
With Trip Tucker III.
With Charles Trip Tucker III. I believe it was the first species they encountered that was pre-warp. And so they had to go... there's a whole thing that they have to go down and do some stuff and do undercover. Archer, of course, ends up... I think he sleeps with the
I bet he
lady.
Does.
And, but it's interesting because in the Archer's time, they were pre-warp, but now they are clearly...
Post-warp.
Interesting.
Post-warp discovery.
But one of my favorite lines of the whole episode was that when the administrator at the end comes storming onto the bridge and is like, I demand I'm a prisoner, blah, blah, blah. And Burnham is just like, hey.
So snarky.
Hey, dickhead. You're going to be a refugee now.
Your shit doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I know. Right?
That was awesome. That was personal. That cut deep.
Because she cut him off and she's like, that one?
I'm making fun of you.
She's just getting knocked into the sun?
Yeah. Yes, I'm taunting your dead world.
No, you're just another refugee.
Yeah, now I hope you, and I forget the exact
words. She says, I hope you find a more just society than the one you had a hand in creating.
Yes.
That was so smug and snarky, but it was kind of awesome.
Because the future's all fucked up.
Yeah. But it was, that was like really pointed and like direct. That was really directed. Like, and
user or a piece of shit. Yeah. I was just hanging out with a murderer and I was getting along.
Yeah,
with
she wasn't trying to really be diplomatic at all there. It was kind of, you know, maybe you could say it wasn't professional, but it was kind of awesome.
And even though we mostly focused on Felix and of course just brilliant acting, and so that I think that helped make it work too.
Yeah, I like that.
I did like the other people. There's a couple we don't really see because they said there's six life forms. We kind of see four of them foregrounded, and I like that one guy who are like, this guy was in for trading in counterfeit latinum, and he's just like, he's like, meh.
Yeah, right.
Like, what are you gonna do? I totally was.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
He almost looked like, I know. I mean, what a ridiculous thing to counterfeit. Latinum, they're gonna figure that shit out pretty quick. I'm an idiot.
Yeah. He would have been like the thief in the in your Final Fantasy crew or your role playing game crew. He would have been the thief.
Oh
yeah.
Man,
yeah,
they've got a guy like that on Wheel of Time.
Yep, they do. They do. They do. Yeah. So they had this quanarium alloy, which was the strongest, one of the strongest metals. Do you think it's stronger than vibranium?
I'm not going to answer that, but I'm gonna...
Jesse, do you think quinarium is stronger than vibranium?
Quinarium.
I think it might be quinarium. Not as strong as
vibranium has some kind of radioactive power. Snarlorbian. It's definitely stronger than adamantium.
I think so.
Maybe.
I found this.
Adamantium is the strongest substance in the universe.
Isn't vibranium stronger than adamantium? I don't really know.
What's vibranium?
That's the shit that they have in they have that in Wakanda.
Oh.
And they're always, and that's what Captain America's shield is made of.
Oh shit.
Is adamantium a pure metal and vibranium alloy? I don't know.
I think it's the reverse. I think adamantium
might be the
reverse. An alloy.
And vibranium is pure?
It vibrates.
Okay, so are you going to make fun of the way I pronounce the quinarium or something? No. I don't know how to pronounce it.
I don't know how to pronounce it either. Some made up shit.
Okay, so what were you going to laugh at?
I just thought it was a funny exchange. It was silly. It almost seemed extraneous. I mean, they could have been like, it was like, all right, let's try to heat it up and fry out the circuits. Okay, how long do you think it'll take? I don't know. Don't tell them. they just have this extra line. It's like, that's one of the most difficult. Yeah. It's insane. There's nothing we can do. And I don't know if they were just saying like, well, if we shoot it, the audience will expect it to like explode, and we need to explain why it's not going to explode, and we need to explain why we just needed to have an extra 5 seconds of film here. I don't know. It was just a little
it was a little arbitrary.
Again, though, that being said, nothing different than a million other things we've seen in Star Trek, where they're in the middle of something and just the exposition is just explaining why they're doing something a particular way.
Radvec,
for the benefit of the audience,
Radvec 5.
This is another example of what we see in the show a lot, since they're in the future.
Cow up my lot.
And you have the Discovery people like, well, we're the Federation and we're here to help. And the other people are like, the Federation doesn't help people.
Right.
The Federation doesn't help people.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like, no, but we're here to help you right now. It's like, no.
Where were you a minute ago? Usually it's presented in the form of like, we're not going to trust you and we're not going to get on board with you because you fuck people over. Now it's kind of the other way where it's like, where were you?
Yeah,
you
know? Right. So you didn't help us before.
What's kind of fun is that Discovery after season 3 and continuing into season 4 is mirroring in some ways the experiences that Captain Archer and the Enterprise crew had, because Captain Archer and the Enterprise crew were pre-Federation, a bunch of Earthlings, humans that people either didn't know about, or if they heard about them, they were freaked out by these crazy fucking people who were like tooling around, going warp 5 and shit, messing around, fucking around with shit.
Yeah, the Vulcans held that shit from them for 50 years.
My point being is that Captain Archer, a lot of his job was talking to people and convincing them that Archer and crew were not trying to be assholes. Yeah. It's like, no, wait, we want to help you. And everyone's like, why the fuck would you want to help us? Nobody's ever trying to help us.
Because we're the Federation. Well, that's before the Federation.
Yeah, but still, it's like, that's our, you know, we're all about that.
We're the fucking Enterprise.
And now Captain Burnham's in the exact same situation where she's going around, you know, now she's trying to bring back the Federation's reputation by going around and doing nice things, but it's still the same basic function.
Nobody wants
having to
nice
talk to
things.
People and be like, you gotta, don't worry, we're not gonna fuck you over, or if we do, it won't be too much, don't worry about it.
Everybody's got such a chip on their shoulder,
so
it's kind of like now.
So we didn't really for real though, we didn't really discuss which is the there was an A, B, and C plot, but there was no, we don't know which was the head plot.
I don't know.
It was all a swirly swirl.
In this case, it might be the Stamets, etc., the Targa, seemed a little bit more forefront. Hard to say because Ken Burnham's stuff, it was a good plot, but it really was a side plot, her and Book.
Yeah.
And it was thin. And I don't mean that in a negative way. It was just that it's super straightforward. Assholes want to let the prisoners die. Federation wants to save them. Obstacles in the way, they solve the obstacles, and there's a brief philosophical dilemma. Story over.
Yeah, the other two plots, the main one I guess you could say is about Stamets, but then there was also Culber. Both those were kind of about like balance between work and life, mm-hmm. work and home balance. The Stamets's part was like he only cares about work, so it means he has no life. And Culber's was more like it's not that he cares only about work, it's that he's specifically avoiding life through work.
Yes.
You know, so that's kind of like the theme.
I think that's a well-observed.
Well-observed.
Well-observed difference. So they share some stuff in common, but they are coming at it from different angles.
But yeah, you're right. I couldn't really place what exactly there doesn't need to be some kind of overarching point. But like I think you summarized it pretty good with the one with Burnham and on that planet. It was fun. It was neat. Presented some dilemmas and some ideas.
And sets up a foundation for a future conflict between Burnham and Book.
I concur.
Which we'll see if that's fulfilled or not. That seems to be the direction.
I like those saw blade things that the robot, robot beetles would shoot out.
Even though they were also totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They hit the rock and they were slowly like making their way through the rock. And
it going to like explode the rock or something?
Yeah. It reminded me of a video game almost. Like that's their alternate fire button. Like
this was a video game level.
Yeah, because like there's like the gun that has the main primary fire, but your alternate fire is to throw this saw blade like that can melt through. Thing, yeah, you know. Right.
All this, all the obstacles they faced to rescue the prisoners were video game.
Yeah. Oh,
there was a special barrier. It's like in a James Bond, like in GoldenEye or something, where it's like you have to remove this person from the building before you can, whatever, rescue them.
You have to catch the attention of the Beatles so they can blow up and blow down the door.
I did like the solution. I predicted it in my brain, using my brain meat. But it was well executed and I thought it was fun. And even though I didn't like the dialogue that was accompanied, the only thing I didn't like when they were walking around was like, oh.
But I like that Felix guy. He was pretty cool.
Yeah, Felix.
Cooler than Neelix.
That guy was cool.
I don't know how to pronounce. I was looking up his name. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's Michael and then it's G-R-E-Y-E-Y-E-S.
G-R-E-Y-E-I-E-I-O.
It's like gray eyes, except it's one word.
Maybe it's gray eyes.
Maybe it's gray eyes.
Michael gray eyes.
Seems to be perhaps a native American.
I think he's Canadian, but like
Canadian, first nations type.
But
yeah,
brilliant acting.
Maybe it is just gray eyes. I just didn't expect it to be one word. That was throwing me off.
And Deep Space Nine style, we're seeing our characters
from Saskatchewan
encounter new people along the
way. That's Canada for real.
And have little moral adventures, tales with them, and then move along and they'll remember them. Even if we don't see the person again.
He's from the Muskeg Lake Cree Nation.
Mm. Mm. Excellent. Salad. I was about to say, I hope we see him again, but we will not.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe they'll use him for a different character.
So,
classic Star Trek fashion.
Any other major points?
No other major points.
I don't have any major points.
I don't have any other major points.
Did you like the Cronenberg scene? I like Cronenberg's matter of factness.
I like every scene that guy's in.
I gave a whole thing about death based on it. Yeah.
He didn't come up very much in that conversation. I just wanted to comment on the bluntness is great.
His character.
It's still exposition, mm-hmm. but it's well constructed exposition, and he just is he's turned into this character. He's willing to tell people like the deal. Mm-hmm. I go back and forth a little bit. In some scenes, I think the acting is better than in other scenes. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that might be depends how special effect he is. Like when he was talking to Tilly in the Starfleet Academy, at one point I thought it worked very well. At the other point, it seemed, and this is quite probably true because of COVID and other things, it seemed like he was just recording his lines to nobody. Right. And it was a little disjointed.
But it was a perfect end to the conversation. He's like, I have another meeting right now.
Busy motherfucker.
He's like, I'll see. He didn't even say, I'll see you. He's like, I got another meeting. Zoop. But yeah.
And he didn't say 1400. He's all about the, 2:00. Oh. All right. Odds and ends.
I bet you $1,000,000 of gold-pressed latinum that Zora gets her own robot body one day.
That's right. We totally didn't talk about Zora. Yeah. Now, have you seen the short treks? The specific short trek that deals with Zora?
I've seen all the short treks. There haven't been any new ones, right?
No.
I have seen them all, but I'll have to watch it again because I forget a
Calypso
lot of it.
Calypso is the name of the short trek where we are first introduced to Zora way before, back in season two of Discovery, right? So just to avoid any spoilers for people who haven't seen it, and it's not even really spoilers because if you see it, you'll understand.
Well, spoilers in the eye of the beholder.
Some
people don't like to know anything.
The spoilee.
Yeah. So that is why I'm not going to delve into it, even though I think you could describe the entire plot of Calypso and still not have a clear idea. But there's definitely some information that's presented there.
Because, you should watch it. Check it
because
out.
Zora is involved there. But it is important to mention that we see Burnham having that conversation with Zora. Right? Like they've already gotten used to the idea that the computer decided to call itself Zora. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now Burnham is talking to Zora and Zora is talking about emotions and how you're feeling and all this stuff. And Burnham seems a little bit, perplexed or whatever. But she also is like, there's a moment where she's like, the fuck are we dealing with here?
Yeah.
Because she already dealt with that whole control AI bullshit. Yeah. And now there's like her fucking Starfleet computer is talking to her she got that sphere data in there.
You seem like you're a little upset today, Captain Burnham.
And I really like this character of the computer character of Zora. And I'm so looking forward to see where they go with this. One theory that's been floated around out there by a few people is they keep bringing up this issue of the pilots for the spore drive. You've got Stamets and you've got Book now who's figured out how to fly the spore drive. Basically nobody else. Maybe Zora learns how to drive the spore drive.
Then she'll be Zora the Explorer.
I respect that. I do.
I respect that a lot.
I would like to be angry about that, but that's a good one.
That's a good one.
That's a good
one. That's a good
one. Zora the Snorer.
Oh,
Zora
shit. The
But anyway, so that's going to be interesting to see where they go with that.
If she does get a robot body like I'm predicting, do you think it'll be all chrome and robot-y, or do you think it'll just look like human like Gray's body?
I think she's going to stay in the ship. Who knows? Maybe she creates the DMA
But that wasn't one of the options I presented. Right, they make her a body, do you think that body? Do you think that body will be robot-y and chrome, or do you think
do you think
it'll be all human like?
I think it'll be nobody.
I think it'll look like the maid in the Jetsons.
I hope so.
You're just being silly.
I think it'll look like Mr. Roboto from the Styx song, Mr. Roboto.
You're indirectly telling me that's a ridiculous question to postulate.
I'm not saying any such thing.
Postulate upon, I guess. You know it won't look like from the Jetsons.
So what do you think it's going to look like then?
I was just wondering if it'll be humanoid either way, but do you think I was wondering if it'll look all like human-y or if it'll look all chrome and reflective-y, like a T-1000 or something. I don't know.
Like a T-1000 or like a protocol droid? Is that what you're saying? You think it's going to look like a protocol droid?
C-3PO guy?
C-3PO style?
Yeah, but more human-like. It's just, the only difference is she's reflective and chrome.
Okay, you're the one asking the question, but you clearly have something envisioned. Why don't you simply describe
chrome
it to
and
us?
Shiny.
It's like chrome and shiny and the hair.
Shiny and chrome.
And shiny and chrome.
And the hair.
I'll die and live again.
Mad Max. Fury.
I forgot. Sorry.
Who runs Barter Town? Master Blaster.
And her hair will kind of look like Dot Matrix from Spaceballs, and that it'll
and Dot Matrix looks like C-3PO, like a protocol.
No. Just the hair, though. Just the hair will look. It'll be all metallic and weird. But then her body will look like a normal sort of
like a flesh, like a Japanese flesh robot.
Is this one of those?
I don't know about that.
Look up Japanese flesh robot.
No,
on Google.
No,
do it right now.
What's it called? Rule 34.
I don't think you need Rule 34 for that. I think just Japanese flesh robot. You can purchase.
I'm just thinking it'll look like a human with a chrome reflective body.
This is where you get into.
But you mean with flesh, right? You mean with flesh?
No, it's a chrome reflective body.
So like, but then how does that look like a human?
No, not a flat. Now I know what you're talking about. Not like a flesh body. She looks metallic.
He looked at the Japanese sex robot.
He saw it and he shut his phone down. I saw it.
He's like, that's not what I'm talking about.
I'm talking about she just looks like a humanoid with humanoid parts, but she's metallic and like.
Yeah, you're describing C-3PO.
No, but not all like stiff like C-3PO. Smooth.
So live.
Lithe, yeah. Lithe. But her hair won't be stringy. Supple. It'll look. Her hair will be very like solid and metallic and just kind of a lump of thing, like solid, a perm, like a permed hair, like if you permed your hair,
like gem
in the holograms?
Like if you permed your hair and made it a solid thing, like Dot Matrix from Space. This isn't worth arguing about.
I'm just curious where you're getting this imagery from.
I think I'm getting it from Mass Effect.
Oh, okay. I haven't played Mass Effect, so I'm not super familiar with that.
Is that about Massachusetts?
It is, yeah.
I wish.
It's the Mass Effect.
I wish.
You ever heard that Ilvis song? Ilvis have a song about Massachusetts. Yeah, it's pretty great. Right.
Ilvis?
Ilvis.
It's like they don't really know about Massachusetts. They just like the name Massachusetts. Yeah.
They did the, you know, the What Does the Fox Say? Which is a great song, but is one of their lesser songs. Their whole catalog is brilliant. And the Massachusetts song is pretty darn good. It's not as good as the one about the old men who go kill some horses, but Ilvis.
Those guys are out there.
I have about two more. Does anyone else have any odds and ends?
No, I have none.
I mean, I did, but you made me draw a blank. You pushed them out of my head.
I'm sorry.
I spent my odds and I spent my ends.
When there was one part after they talked to Zora where there was I think it was Zora that was saying this, I'm assuming, or maybe it was just one of the crew members. I can't remember. But it was saying like, attention, duty logs have been updated to reflect new rotations effective immediately.
I really like that part.
Yeah, I laughed because it's the duty logs.
Oh. I like you and I liked it for different reasons. I just like the Star Trek style ambiance, which is something that we got a lot in Star Trek 2, Star Trek 3, Star Trek 6, etc. You know,
no, I like that too.
Walking around star bases and stuff.
I like that too, but then I thought about duty logs and I started.
That's funny. Because it's both duty, which is like feces, and logs, which is like a log of feces.
like a whole log.
Like it's a duty log.
Precisely.
Yeah. I mean, people come here for this sort of sophisticated analysis, but
I was thinking that when what's his name? Felix. When Felix was telling Doc.
It's funny that his name is Felix somehow.
Yeah, I know. It is kind of weird.
It's too much like Neelix.
Right? When Burnham was like, what's the name of, you know, this person? He's like, Doxica. They should have given that. You'd think he would have given that information right when he handed over the thing, but whatever, dramatic effect, whatever. Because literally, if he had said it a second later, they wouldn't have known. Yeah. I'm sure they could have found out some other way, but still, it's like, why did they wait till the last second to ask?
Girl was on the colony. Yeah,
she was on the colony.
Okay, that's why Burnham just found her right away.
Well, he killed the guy there, right. So the girl grew up on the same colony. Okay. It looked like the kind of colony that is not easy to get away from.
And I think this happened in Shawshank Redemption, but like whenever someone gives the name of something and they don't write it down, I'm worried they'll forget it. So I was like, what if she forgets the name of
So Watanea?
Yeah, exactly. So what if she forgot Doxica? And then I was thinking, well, they would have lost because in the future, everything gets recorded. And then I started thinking about how back in the 90s, when the internet was starting to become a thing, people used the internet as this sort of refuge of sort of like a place to go to have private conversations. So you're not always having someone tell you what to do.
ASL.
Yeah,
age, sex, location.
Right, basically a place to be able, you could feel free and have like those kinds of situations. That was one of the draws of the internet, is you didn't have people like your teachers being like, don't do that. It's like, I can go here and no one will judge me.
Yeah,
and
you
that
could
kind
be 12 years old, go on the internet and find some guy who would tell you to whatever it is you want to do, he'd say, go right ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Go right ahead and do it, Dan.
I mean, there's definitely some dangerous aspects of that. I'm not promoting those.
Why don't you come over to my house? I'll buy you a plane ticket.
Look, I'm not saying that it was good or bad. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but that was one of the things.
But it was freedom.
But it was one of the things. God damn it. Do not place any judgment on me, because I'm not saying it's good
or
bad.
I'm not judging.
We're a pro-freedom podcast.
No, I'm saying that was one of the places people went to do that kind of stuff, sketchy or not, right? But when you think about it, that's like the worst place. In retrospect, that's the worst place to do stuff like that. Because thinking about, just as they recorded, they could have recorded Doxica to hear later, like, their refuge was a place where everything can be monitored, ultimately. So the internet is more monitorable than day-to-day life now, you know? And back then it was like less monitorable, but now it's like it was silly for us to think that the internet could be used as a place of freedom and anonymity.
That's why we got to go back to the old BBS days, bulletin board systems. That's where true privacy was, you know, analog over a modulator, demodulator, 2400 baud.
Somehow we expected a medium that doesn't degrade, as opposed to like, you know, records or films. We somehow expected that would allow us to escape from surveillance. It's like we fled from a sword and took solace in a pit of spikes.
You wrote that down ahead of time.
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. Well, it was good then. It sounded like you did.
That's pretty good.
That means it's really good. If it sounds like you wrote it down ahead of time and that was actually extemporaneous.
We thought we could say things in secret in a medium that is terrible at keeping secrets.
A nest of vipers.
Okay, so part of what's leading me to think you wrote this down ahead of time is because you're reading from your phone.
I'm reading my notes. They're my notes.
I know, so you wrote it down.
Your notes are over here.
Yeah, my eyes are up here. What's your point?
One odd and end.
Well, you can read from notes without reading verbatim. It could have just said surveillance internet, and I could have just come up with that all on the fly.
You could have.
Why are you trying to call me out in front of the audience?
I'm not trying to call you out in front of anybody.
You did. You read that.
I think you're Kaiser Sose.
You said you read that.
Yeah, you're like reading behind on the wall behind Jesse.
Lamp. Your name. My name is Lamp Woodboard.
My name's Pile of Books. But I wanted to mention the whole thing with it's Reese, right?
Reese.
Commander Reese. On the one hand, I liked the idea of having him wanting to volunteer for this evacuation mission, to lead this evacuation mission, because he has a personal involvement in it, because in good just not only Star Trek style, just good classic style. It's a way to introduce an aspect of his personality that we didn't know before.
Yeah.
The other bridge crew, it's always difficult to do it. The only problem I had was they did it in this complicated Bazackwards order. What he should have explained when he volunteered for it, just from a dramatic perspective, when he volunteered for it, he should have said, "Captain, can I volunteer for this? You might not recall, but my family, the whole city was destroyed by a hurricane, and the Starfleet officers helped me, so I have some perspective. I think I can help these people." And then Captain Burnham says, "That's perfect. That's great. You go do that."
And beyond just a dramatic, way of presenting it, it actually would make more sense because it would, instead of just being like, "I want to do it," she's like, "Why should I let you do it?"
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. It would make a lot more sense to me. I don't know. It just that there was something, bizarre about the narrative.
Unless they decided to go the route of, "Well, you're too close to this, so you won't be." You know how they do that sometimes? They say, "You're too close to this, so you don't have an objective perspective." I don't know. But I don't think they would have gone. Yeah. I think he has a reason. Yeah, you're right. He probably
didn't grow up on Earth, because on Earth you can like control the weather and stuff.
And then when he's talking to them, I mean, they had a good reason to talk to him at the time. It made sense that Burnham would, you know, be touching base with him in particular, seeing how the evacuation is going right before she walks into the non-communication zone part of the video game.
That was definitely it from a video game. We're going to the dark zone for a while. That's the part of the video game where if you die in there, you lose all your items and weapons and stuff.
Yeah.
If you die in the dark land, you lose all the gold you made and everything. But if you die outside of the dark land, you get to keep all.
Were I to have rewritten this episode or edited this episode, I would have moved the revelation that he had experience being evacuated from a catastrophic event by Starfleet. I would have moved that to when he volunteered. But then in this section, I would have had it be, you know, he's communicating holographically with Burnham. She's asking for an update, and him giving the update, saying like, "Everything's going well. There's some concerned people, but you know, I'm getting through to them because, you know, I've been through a similar situation." Some dialogue to convey that, because of my experience that I've referenced previously, that's helping the process go smoothly. So don't worry about it. The audience doesn't need to worry about that entire storyline. They can just assume the evacuation is going to go well. And let us focus here. Cause that's fundamentally what they were doing was we have Burnham and Book evacuating these six people that they have to, you know, deal with these obstacles to get to. So that's what we're watching. In order to not distract us from that story, they have to state outright on multiple occasions that just make it clear to the audience, don't worry about the actual massive evacuation of the many thousands of other people.
That's going to go smoothly.
That's going fine. Because if the audience is thinking about that, even subconsciously, it's going to draw your attention away a little bit.
Because that's a big fucking deal.
And it is also going to alter how you subjectively interpret the actions of Burnham and the prisoners, etc. Because if you're thinking about it in the context of, why is Burnham wasting her time with these assholes? They're being assholes. She could be off helping with these other people. But if we are confident, which I do think they accomplish getting this message across that we are confident that we don't even have to worry about that whole fucking evacuation. Saru's making sure the transporters have plenty of power. Reese is making sure that it's getting out based on his experience. Now, they conveyed all that. I think they conveyed it slightly awkwardly, but successfully.
Mm-hmm. They said there were 1,206 people to evacuate. Do you think that includes the 6 that were the examples? Seems like an exact number of people.
No, they weren't. Well, the
They said there's 1,206 people they had to evacuate.
Yeah. I hadn't noticed that. That's a little bit on the nose. So I think it is including those 6 people.
So that means that they had to take 40, because the beam can hold the array, the ray can beam 40 at a time. So that's like 30 trips. That's 30 trips that it takes.
30 Charles Strip Tucker the Thirds?
Yep. You were talking.
That would be so fun.
That would be fun.
That would be super fun.
That would be like 76 trombones, except better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were talking earlier about moving Revelations. What do you got?
Right, to like a different part of the Bible?
Yeah, you were going to try to take Revelations and move it to a different
part. I would move that. I would move Revelations more in the middle.
I would say more.
Just to throw things up, kind of like Pulp Fiction, you know, put the end in the middle.
Yeah, I would think Revelations would be best as the very first thing in the Bible to catch your attention, because Lord knows that Genesis shit is not interesting.
The Genesis stuff starts out strong, gets boring real quick.
It's all about begat this, begat that. And
tell me everything about Genesis.
Genesis does. You can't do this on Nintendo. Genesis does. Genesis does. Genesis does.
Sega.
Yeah. Or Star Trek 2. Either. Whichever you prefer.
You mean from the Kelvin universe?
You know what's a funny one is Leviticus is funny.
Leviticus is
tells
great.
You can't eat eagles and don't eat eagles and shrimp.
They were onto something though, because like, you know, we're still not supposed to be eating eagles in America.
Carnivores, right?
What the hell are you talking
carnivores
about?
We're not supposed to bald eagles. You can't hunt bald eagles in America.
In America, you can't be hunting.
It's the it's a national bird.
You might as well be shooting down America
might
itself.
Might as well shoot down America. Might as well I think somebody beat us to that.
Might as well blow your. Oh shit!
I think we're just doing that to ourselves.
Yeah.
Any other odds and ends? Otherwise, no. I think that.
I think it was a great podcast. I think we really,
really nailed that one.
Yeah, that was
really
an excellent podcast. As always,
knocked it right out.
As always,
Joss Sepp.
Joe Lantrue.
You're talking about Joss Sepp.
Joss Sepp.
That was like something about Stamets' research on the Joss Sepp, which is something to do with the mycelial network.
Yeah, those are the people those are the creatures that live in the mycelial network.
I need to rewatch that whole
section.
Yeah, because that was fucking far out.
Yeah, that's the one that was messing with Tilly because they were explaining you know, every time you travel, you're fucking us up. But then they sort of went away from that and I think sort of retroactively are like, okay, they figured out a way not to bother those people. So, all right. I think that should do it then. We've finished up all our odds and ends. As Jesse noted, this was an excellent episode of the podcast. Pretty good episode of Star Trek Discovery as well. Next week, we will be discussing episode 6.
The next episode.
Of season 4 of Star Trek Discovery. I presume we don't know the episode yet because we've run out of the pre-published episode titles. Now we're waiting.
Maybe there'll be a Klingon.
Days on it. Yeah, that'd be awesome. If the season finale is like, it's all fucking Klingons. It's just nothing but Klingons. Fucking Klingons all over the place. That'd be great.
Yeah, Clem Fandango.
But in the meantime, we hope you have a lovely one. Tune in next week and we will, because we'll be here next week, right? You guys want to be here next week?
Yes.
Keep doing this for a little while.
It's Xmas Eve next week.
Yeah, but we can still do it. We'll still figure it out. I don't know.
Yeah,
we can still do it.
Yeah, we can still do it. I don't have any.
It's not like we're, you know.
I think we can go above and beyond and provide a Christmas treat. Provide a Christmas treat for our friends out there in the audience. And,
yeah,
and they can open up their presents, and then in the afternoon they open up a fresh episode of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
I think that's so warm.
Fresh and steamy.
I just want to curl up with a warm cup of cocoa in front of the fire, listen to a podcast with a good book,
some eggnog,
and so it ends.
Some eggnog with mad amount of eggnog in it.
It ends just similar to how it began, with Dan doing a funny voice.
Funny voice.
I'm doing a funny voice right now. This is me doing a funny voice. This is humorous.
This is a great podcast. All right. Everybody. So that's enough for us this week.
That's way fucking
social media.
Hey Jesse.
At
hey,
It's Got Star Trek.
Hey, what?
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube.
Did you ever watch us on YouTube, Jesse?
www.itsgotstartrek.com and feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. to send your old-fashioned emails. Send
you can,
those along.
You can look at us by seeing it's got Star Trek. You can see us on Twitter and Instagram doing that. Hey, Jesse, did you know that?
Yes, I did.
All right, we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Is that safe?
Let's see. If one is nothing to worry about and 10 is insane, I would say it's probably a 6.
Great science was never accomplished with caution.
I'm not sure that's actually true.